This episode of Star Wars in a Galaxy was recorded and produced during the 2023 WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes. Without the labor of the writers and actors currently on strike, the stories being covered here wouldn't exist. Thank you, and enjoy this episode of In a Galaxy. Hello there.
Hello there.
Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And today we are with you for episode 108 of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Today we're wrapping this puppy up. We are wrapping it up. We are finishing season 2 of Star Wars: The Bad Batch. It's one of the first times, I think, Jacob, I just realized this. I'm going to check exactly when. It's going to be one of the first times we're not covering a Star Wars animated television show in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This has been... I like to joke that sometimes our show feels more like Star Wars in a Clone Wars. And this almost feels like an extension of that. So this is a bittersweet recording. You know, we really... So much of what our show is and what we do is very informed by, you know, the Clone Wars and our experience, I think, watching that show especially, and this show as well.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little bit bittersweet, but exciting.
Oh, just extremely exciting.
Just as it was exciting to leave the Clone Wars behind, I think we're not as much, but I'm definitely going like a little stir crazy for some things other than animation.
Absolutely. So if we're counting Genndy Clone Wars and droids in that, which I would, because they're both animated television, we've been doing this nonstop for 3 years, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. Wow.
Yeah.
We've had some intermittent breaks. You know, a few movies in there, a little bit of some video games.
Well, really, Sith we did while watching TCW anyway.
That's true. So that was intermingled.
That as still doing it, because we were still doing it. Even if we don't count Genndy, though, we've still been doing it for a little less than 3 years. We've been doing animation since like fall 2020. So yeah, we've been doing it a long time, but we're excited to get to the end. But we're excited to talk about these two episodes. We're excited to talk about Tipping Point, The Summit, and Plan 99.
Three absolutely banger episodes, if I may say so.
Firestorms of an episode. Like, goddamn. And
these were something else.
Yeah,
let's do it. All right. So, in Tipping Point, we open on the planet of Balmora, where we see a group of clone prisoners being loaded onto a Gozanti-class Imperial transport ship. However, as they are leaving the planet, they are attacked by a ship full of clones, including Echo, and Rex is there too, right?
Rex is leaving.
Echo and Rex and some clones, and they attack, and Gregor, good catch. They attack the ship and they rescue the clone prisoners, leaving the ship behind, and they escape. Meanwhile, over on Wayland, on Mount Tantus, we have Hemlock once again trying to, or not once again, I guess this time, Hemlock now has Crosshair as his prisoner, and he's trying to get information out of Crosshair. So he tortures Crosshair. He says he wants Crosshair to reveal the location or to help him find Omega, and Crosshair refuses pretty much. And Crosshair actually takes advantage of a moment of, he takes advantage in a lapse of attention to actually overpower the stormtroopers in his cell and escape. However, he escapes and he sends a transmission to the Bad Batch. He says, Plan 88, they're coming
Seeker.
After you.
The Seeker.
The Seeker plan. So basically telling the Bad Batch, they're after you. They're after you. And however, he is then subdued by poison gas and is recaptured. He is recaptured by Hemlock. And then we cut to Pabu. Over on Pabu, we have Tech and Omega. They're just chilling out, doing some flying lessons. Wrecker's doing some fishing. Hunter's doing some brooding and more brooding as he usually does.
Getting broody over here.
Yeah, Hunter, he does some brooding. What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. He's brooding though. He's brooding, all right. Hunter's brooding. They're all having a good time. And they're reunited with Echo. Echo comes back with the ship. Echo needs the Bad Batch's help to decrypt the information that he got from the ship, because there was encrypted information to try and figure out where the clones go. They do eventually decrypt that information, revealing that the clones, the transferred prisoner clones, are being taken to Wayland and Mount Tantus. They're being taken to Dr. Hemlock and the Advanced Science Division, where they're doing some sort of sinister stuff to the clones that we don't really know. So Echo decides to mount up with the core Bad Batch once again. Then we cut back to Mount Tantus, where Hemlock has recaptured Crosshair and is torturing him some more, just for good measure.
In the summit, they found out that Hemlock is heading to an Imperial summit hosted by Wilhelm Tarkin on his home world of Iriadu, and Tech and Fee have a final little awkward goodbye, and they wave goodbye to Pabu before they set off for Iriadu, who is a treacherous planet, much like its hometown, home planet hero of Tarkin, and they have to ride a railing system to get to Tarkin's fortress where the summit is being held. At the summit, we see many Imperial officers, including Royce Hemlock, and of course Wilhelm Tarkin, Herstra Modi, Barton Coburn, and indeed the Director of Advanced Weapons Research, Orson Krennic, who's working on something called Project Stardust, which we'll get to. So they manage to take the rail system over, and they blast their way in, moving covertly to try and attach the jam tracker to Hemlock's ship so they can try and find out where Crosshair is. And things are going pretty well until they start notice some deactivated cameras and some things like somebody else was there. And oh my God, that's not a TK trooper. That's Saw Gerrera. Apparently Saw and the Partisans were planning on blowing up the summit and taking down Tarkin and several high caliber leaders like Hemlock and Krennic. And the Bad Batch managed to get their forces out of there, but Stahl still blows up the base. And while they're on the monorail, the power of the monorail, which is powered by a generator, which I assume is at the fortress, the fortress is blown up. The power generator, though no one is killed or injured on the Imperial side, at least the important officials, the power is taken out, so the monorail stops, leaving the Batch trapped in the air. We pick up right where we left off in Plan 99. Tech spirals up to get the power back. He gets the power back to the monorail, but the Bad Batch are getting surrounded by V-Wings and other TK troopers. And then it comes. Tech is hanging on by a thread, and by a zip line, and the only way he can escape is by activating Plan 99, which is the sacrifice. Tech lets go of the zip line. The Batch crews on back, and Tech dies. The aftermath is very blurry from Omega's perspective as she's trying to process the trauma. They decide to go back to Ord Mantell because Omega needs medical help because the train car she was in crashed. Ord Mantell starts getting Omega to help, and then Echo's waiting outside on the Havoc Marauder, and he starts to notice something. A Star Destroyer emerges in the sky. And he goes to tell the Batch about it, but alas, the comms are jammed. Sid is talking to to Wrecker, and she apologizes to him about what happened to Tech, and then she apologizes again. And then it's revealed that she took a deal with the Empire. She betrayed the Batch and turned over the Empire. She had a lot of heat on her, apparently, but she turned the Batch over to the Empire. Hemlock captures both Hunter and Wrecker to try and get to Omega. Omega refuses to give herself up to save Hunter and Wrecker, not trusting Hemlock. But while the Imperial occupation of Ord Mantell is underway, Scorch, one of Delta Squad, stuns her. And although Hunter and Wrecker manage to escape with the help of Echo in an Imperial Walker and fly away, Omega is captured by Hemlock and taken alongside Crosshair to Mount Tantus, where she is to be used as leverage over Nala Se. Then Hemlock's assistant comes in, Emery Carr, who we've been seeing a bit over the last few episodes, and tells Omega not to worry because questions Omega over her attachment to Crosshair when her own sister is there. And we end season two of The Bad Batch with a revelation that Emery Carr and Omega are sisters. And that's how we end the season. What a three episode sequence to go through. Like, holy crap. Like,
yeah. Probably the best three episode run, in my opinion, I think, is pretty phenomenal.
I would say, honestly, you know what I would say?
Yeah.
I would say the best three episode run is actually combined of these two, and like of two of these and then one from before, because I would say Pabu tipping point. I'd say the Outpost Pabu tipping point is my favorite three episode run.
Interesting. Okay.
Of the season. Maybe you could also argue for me Clone Conspiracy, Truth and Consequences, The Crossing is another underrated one. Or even, frankly, Ruins of War, The Solitary Clone, Faster, 2, 3, 4. But we'll get all that to our retrospective episode next week. But let's start off with Tipping Point. So yeah, we start off.
What an episode.
Balmora is in there. We start off by seeing this clone network, the resistance network that Rex has formed. And we see what they're doing. They're rescuing clones. We see them rescuing Hauser from the Ryloth arc. We see a bunch of other clones working with the network. One of the clones' names is Nemec, which I remember specifically because this came out pretty soon after Andor. And we're like, oh, look, there's a clone named Nemec too. That's cool. Hauser gets rescued. Echo's there. Rex is there. So's Gregor. And they bomb an Imperial transport. And they get the fuck out of there. I love the fact that, remember, because Echo knows who Hauser is because he was on Ryloth in season one. So that's how they know each other. Because at first I was like, wait, how does Rex know who Hauser is? There's no way he should have known about that. And then I realized, oh no, wait, Echo knows because he was on Ryloth in season one, and that makes sense. Yeah, it's a fantastic action sequence episode. Like, it's a fantastic action sequence in the beginning. It's energizing, it's empowering, and it sets the episode off really well.
I agree. I thought the opening sequence was brilliant. I love the fact that they kind of, it felt like the episode went out of its way just to have the officers say, we have a schedule to keep, you know, using the classic English villain accent. I thought that was just perfect. And I really got a kick out of that. I loved seeing Gozantes come back, you know, being a big Rebels fan, they feature heavily in that show. So it's cool to see them here as well. Echo and Rex doing their things. Yeah, it's an amazing opening sequence. And then, I mean, to top it all off with the officer freaking killing himself, just like in Mandalorian.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It makes me wonder, how does Palpatine inspire such fanaticism? We just got in power. You know, he just took power. This Empire is new. And this guy's already literally ride or die.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love the additions of the electrocutions. I I remember, like, I'm just looking at my notes right now. I'm writing, like, oh, please tell me he's gonna electrocute. Please, oh, he electrocuted. It's one of my favorite little additions to lore in recent years. I love that they've done that. I love that they established that in Mando, and then they went back in Batch this season, and we're like, oh yeah, they've done this since the beginning.
Yeah,
I think it's such a Star Wars detail.
Yeah,
I think it's definitely something George either like would have done. Like, it sounds like in the George universe of ideas, and I'm not saying that other things don't. I'm saying that this sounds like something that somebody would have told George, and he would have been like, yeah, I think that would be an interesting idea.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it kind of hints at something that I hope we see more in the future in some on-screen content, maybe, or in some kind of content, which is getting, you know, a closer look at Palpatine's interactions with his underlings, or maybe just in another project that's more about the Empire's side of things. You know, how is there in certain people, how is there such fanaticism? You know, is it Palpatine or someone else? You know, kind of, who is it that's creating, or maybe there's multiple, but who are creating, you know, the cults of personality to make this all work and put this together? Because obviously that's something that we kind of see Palpatine. We see Palpatine doing that very effectively with Anakin in Anakin, and to some extent, a lot of the other Jedi and politicians and even clones in the Clone Wars. So it would be interesting to see how he does that later on.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't think about like how he inspired the fanaticism, but that's a good point.
Because my feeling is like,
and it's something that you can't really like. You can pretty easily explain away with Clone X earlier in the season because he seems to be brainwashed in some way.
Yeah, this just seems like a regular guy though. He's not a clone, yeah. You know.
Oh no, absolutely.
He's just an officer.
That's what I'm saying is that
yeah.
Is that we have to ask questions for the other officers because they're not brainwashed. Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's surprising that even, because even we know Imperial officers tend to be very self-serving, and it is surprising that they would give themselves up for the cause like that.
I mean, I think in a way, in some sense, it definitely makes sense, because no, I was going to say, it is kind of confusing because I feel like a lot of times what we see of the Empire is, you know, there's a ton of backstabbing, there's a ton of infighting, people are only motivated by fear.
Yeah.
You know,
and I guess I just realized, I was trying to
kind of
think,
the Empire is all about looking out for number one, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Here's what I'm thinking. And I think this is what it is. Because I was thinking, you know, that's interesting. Why wouldn't we see that in Andor?
Yeah.
My answer for why wouldn't, not Andor, sorry. I said Andor and I was thinking about Andor. I was actually thinking, why wouldn't we see that in Rebels? That's what I was thinking. Why wouldn't we see that in Rebels?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I think the answer to that is,
I was going to say, here's
I think
my
we're probably going to say the same thing, but you know, the in Rebels, you know, we're seeing planets and garrisons and things, you know, scattered through the Outer Rim. These are not by any means the Empire's finest, no matter what the propaganda might say.
That's not even close to what I was going to, I mean, sort of, it's kind of what I was saying.
Like, the top secret projects, that's where the Empire would want to put the people.
That's what I was going to say.
They're willing to die.
I was going
to
say we're seeing a lot more covert branches of the Empire right now.
That is
cool.
I love that.
With the advanced science division, with Clone X and his assassin stuff. Like, they have more motivation to keep things secret, and they have more people who are willing to keep things secret.
I love that. I hope they dive so far into that in Bad Batch Season 3. I'm no conspiracy theorist, at least not on this planet. But I absolutely love the idea of the Imperial Deep State, and you know, just
absolutely,
all the crazy, sinister fuckery that Palpatine's got going
absolutely.
On behind the scenes.
I hope they put that in Andor. I hope that put they put
oh,
it
yeah.
in Andor.
Oh, they're gonna 100%. I'm so ready for it. I'm so ready for it. I'm so excited for it.
I'm excited for it as well. And it makes sense also that Moff Gideon would want to keep his shit super secret. Yeah. Not even from the galaxy, but even, you know, there's that scene from chapter 23 where it's made clear that the rest of the Imperial Ruling Council doesn't really have any idea what Gideon's doing.
Yeah.
So he's trying to keep his shit secret from everybody.
Yeah. And this is we don't even know how far pre-Gideon's ascension to power the Bad Batch ultimately is, you know? Another thing is, I think maybe the difference is the fanaticism might come from if the Empire deems you important enough, they will make sure you know that the punishment for failure
is death.
Is worse than death. It is worse than death. That's why, you know, remember what the Grand Inquisitor said. There's some things far more frightening than death. He would rather kill himself than have to tell Lord Vader that he failed.
He fucked up, yeah.
Like I think it's just a matter of the people who are important enough to the Empire's plans, who are working on something important enough.
Yeah.
That someone else is gonna be like, well, I'm gonna torture you to death now, basically, because you messed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So then we get to the stuff on Wayland. And I will say, I think this episode of all of them, I think tipping point for me, at least what I marked, has the most bass drums I've ever heard in a Bad Batch episode. And that's saying
I love something. The bass drops. Yeah.
I'm like, God damn it. We know it's getting intense. You don't have to do all these fucking bass drums. I mean, I love it, yeah. But I hate it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's awesome. I think it's a lot of fun.
I think it's fantastic too. I think it's fantastic. I just like, you know, it's just like, oh, come on. All right. So let's see. All right. So yeah, we have the stuff with, we go back to Wayland. We're looking at Hemlock and talking to Crosshair. Hemlock's talking to Crosshair. And one of the things he says is, you know, I actually admire such initiative. Shooting your commander, yeah. Officer. I'm like,
so funny.
I don't clock that, even from somebody as weird and quirky as Hemlock. You can buy it something he can just keep saying, like you can buy it something that he's just saying, and that's what I'm going with right now. But I don't actually buy that he's impressed with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just kind of, I mean, I was going to say later, he is just kind of a sicko. Like,
a sicko, but like, there's no reason why he'd be impressed by somebody shooting their commanding officer in the back.
I don't know. I think it just goes to show that he thinks of the clones and even other Imperials. Like, everything is maybe not necessarily. Maybe not necessarily an asset. Everything's a lab test to him, you know. Everything's just a scientific experiment or an oddity to be examined. He doesn't care about the fact that Hunter killed someone, you know. He's just like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
This is what we're dealing with now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting.
I think Crosshair. Sorry, go ahead.
I was also gonna talk about Crosshair, but you go first.
I think Crosshair is super compelling in this episode. I really absolutely like him here. I mean, we already kind of, I mean, even in season one, and then little bits here and there through season one, and then more throughout season two, but really here and in the Outpost and here in the Tipping Point, just seeing him this desperate, this low, you know, this forlorn.
Oh yeah,
it really makes you feel for him, and I he is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters in the Bad Batch.
Absolutely, I think we're seeing at this point that, you know, he's learned the lessons from the solitary clone of the Outpost. I think there is good in him, and I think that he's ready to break free from the Empire. But unfortunately, the minute he realizes that the Empire may not be what is cracked up to be, it starts clamping down on him. And now he's going to have to deal with a bunch of the consequences of his actions, because the Batch will love him and accept him no matter what. The Empire, not so much. Yeah. The Empire, you know, Crosshair may have done terrible things, but at the end of the day, he's still one of the Batch, and they will still accept him. The Empire does care what he does, and it's whatever they want him to do. And as soon as he's not doing that, they don't got much use for him, except for now they're trying to find his squad because they need them, because that's an asset, and blah, blah, blah. So it's unfortunate that that Crosshair, in this way, you know, he's finally seen the light, but he's also seeing something more consequential, which is the consequences of his own actions.
Yeah. I think he's realizing also, you know, it's a little too late, you know?
Yeah, it's a little...
But at the same time... Sorry, go ahead.
It's way too late, yeah.
It's way too late, but at the same time, you know, at the same time, I do feel like this episode is in some way kind of also saying, you know, it is never too late to make some difference.
Well, absolutely. I think that there's a difference between it's never too late to make some difference. And I think it's never too late to make a difference, but you also have to deal with what you've done while you've made the mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I agree.
You have to deal with that. And Crosshair is definitely having to deal with that. I want to talk about Emery for a bit, because, you know, we get this revelation. I think we should just talk about it now, honestly, because I don't really want to talk about it at the end, because as much as I love the ending of Plan 99, this one part is maybe one of my few sticking points of these few episodes. What the fuck is this with Emery? What the fuck is this?
You weren't a fan?
I mean, look. She's a clone. That's cool. I just don't see what that adds right now. I don't see why. She was just introduced in like these past few episodes. We don't really care about her yet. And it's just a strange revelation to drop how and when they did.
Oh, absolutely it is. I think it really is. Leading into next season, I wouldn't be surprised.
And I hope it does. Yeah. And I hope it does. And
because that would make it make sense. That would make it pay off.
Yeah. Right now, however, it feels like something they did just to do. And frankly, if they have a good reason for doing it, if they show us that good reason next season, I'm all for it. And I trust them to show us that good reason. And I personally have my own theories about what that reason is. But right now, because she's sympathetic, you know, she seems like a good person. She's working with the Empire, though, so how good can she be? But is that working?
I don't know about good person. Like
she seems kind.
She wasn't very nice to Crosshair.
I don't know. I think she seemed like, again, I
guess you're under the circumstances.
Or under the circumstances, I was going to say. I think she was
under the circumstances. They could have done a lot worse. So
yeah, again, it's one of those things where like, what are her motivations? Who is she actually? Actually, that's the another question that I had is just how is she another Onoto clone of Django? How is she a sister of Omega? My current theory right now, which is what I wrote down, is that she is also completely unaltered, except for one thing. She actually does have the accelerated agent. But other than that, she's completely unaltered.
That would make sense.
She's no changes to their like coding or anything, no inhibitor chip, no changes to like the DNA structure to make them more docile. None of that. But the accelerated aging, that did happen, actually.
That would be interesting, you know, because I could definitely see the Kaminoans wanting to experiment and play around with all the different ways that they could make the clones.
Yeah, make Django's DNA. I could see that. Yeah,
Yeah, I can definitely
that's
see that.
That's currently my theory about Emery, but we don't actually have any evidence to that one. What we do have evidence for is then that I'm very excited about is that Emery is voiced by somebody who has history with Star Wars before.
Who's that?
Well, Emery is voiced by an actress named a voice actress named voice actress. She's an actress, but named Keisha Castle Hughes.
Castle.
And I think Castle Hughes does a fantastic job with Emery with what she's given in this episode, which admittedly is not a lot. And I'm not saying the writers didn't like, I think the writers gave her little very intentionally, because I think she's still intended to be this great mystery of the show.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But Keisha Castle Hughes, although she's never spoken in Star Wars, she has appeared in Star Wars before. She played the Queen of Naboo, Queen Apailana, at Padme's funeral in episode 3.
Wow.
That's her. So this is a return to her of Star Wars. This is a return to in Star Wars to her.
Long, long time for a reunion. I love
Absolutely. It's been now 18 years. And look at that. There's another Bad Batch tradition of bringing back people we haven't seen in over a decade. But I gotta say, I love what she was doing with Emery, with the little she got. And I'm excited to see her next season. And I think one of the things I have an idea of, which is basically this. So we have, at the end of the season, you know, we'll get to these in the next few episodes. Next to the season, at the end of this season, we have three batch out, right? We have Hunter, Wrecker, and Echo all out, right?
Yeah.
And then we technically have three in. We have Omega in, we have Crosshair in, and then we just conveniently lost one of the members of the Bad Batch.
Oh, so you think Omega's sister is going to join?
I think Emery is going to be a new tech. I don't think you can ever replace tech, but I think she's going to, like, in terms of, like, strategy and tactics, I think she could replace tech's role.
That would be very interesting.
And we would go back to having our six-person Bad Batch and still have tech's death matter. Well, tactically, the squad would have made up for it.
That's a very interesting idea. I like that. Yeah. I like that possibility.
I like it too, and we'll talk about it later. But that's my thing on Emery. She doesn't make a lot of sense to me right now, and I don't think she's supposed to. But yeah, Crosshair obviously escapes. And by the way, I know I was talking to you this last episode, but I need to say this again, Jacob. Dr. Royce Hemlock. Dr. Royce Hemlock. Has an immunity he built up to a poison.
A little on the nose with that one.
This is maybe one of the stupidest things Star Wars has ever done, and I love it so much.
And it's classic Star Wars.
So ridiculously on the nose and stupid, and it is so incredibly Star Wars because of that. Dr. Hemlock being immune to poison, like, come on, guys. It's so funny. It's so fucking funny to me. I love it so much.
This is the same franchise where I think we kind of overlook this fact because it's so ingrained in us. This is the same franchise that had a character who there was a character whose main traits were not wanting to be part of a team really and wanting to work alone. They named that character Solo.
Yes, they did name him Solo. Forget. Well, he named himself Solo. Don't forget about Drawd Mundbrin.
Oh, don't remind me of that.
By the way. If you had one guy to name him Han Solo, it would be Drawd Mundbrin. I mean, that guy had a crappy name.
Of the guy.
That guy had a crappy name. Of course he'd give that other guy a crappy name.
Han Drawd. I'd rather be named Han Solo than
Drawd Mundbrin. Yes, exactly.
I'm gonna keep it keep it 250s with you, Eli. I can't.
Well, also, there's also the fact that let's look at the main characters of the show. We have the guy who's dressed like a Rambo guy, like Rambo, and who's like an old-fashioned hunter. And what do they call him? Hunter. The guy who busts stuff up and wrecks stuff. What do they call that guy? Wrecker. We have a guy who's very good with technology, and they call him Tech. And then they got a guy whose eye is literally like a crosshair of a rifle, and they call him Crosshair. Oh, also, there's a guy who kept repeating orders in the Clone Wars, and they called him Echo. Very creative with the names here, guys.
Creativity is sometimes not Star Wars' strongest point. Sometimes not the strongest.
Sometimes, and then sometimes they have characters named Drod Mundrin.
Yeah.
Or sometimes
they do.
Sometimes they have characters Enough named said. Zargo Anaximander. Which is one of my favorite examples of a strange Star Wars name, Zargo Anaximander. If you have not yet, this is your daily reminder and weekly reminder, because that's how often this show comes out. This is your weekly reminder to read Shadow of the Sith, because it's the GOAT Star Wars book. And because Adam Christopher is a god. All right. Yeah. We're going back to Pabu. We're going back to Pabu. This episode takes place. This is episode 1 of 3 that takes place on the planet. Not 1 of 3. 1 of 2 that takes place on the. No, 3, because with the summit. 3 that takes place on the planet of Pabu. And, you know, they're chilling. And then we get to see Echo experience Pabu, which is a cool thing to experience. Like, again, anytime we see somebody new experience Pabu, you know, in the previous episode, it was the entire crew, but now it's Echo. And I love that, like, staggered, like, he gets to experience too.
Yeah. Everybody loves Pabu. And it's such a contrast in this episode that we cut away from this, you know, gritty, antsy,
horrifying, you know, yeah. Thing.
And we cut away from that. And then immediately, boom, we're back in paradise. We're back on the tropical island with all you can eat sushi. That occasionally has giant deadly tsunamis, but we don't need to talk about that.
30 years, Jacob. 30 years. It doesn't happen a whole lot.
Yeah.
I mean,
although you'd think if it happens, you'd think 30 years is recent enough for them to be like, okay, we should have some kind of protection against it. You know, 30 years ago,
they had a warning system. Okay,
tons of
30 years ago, the Clone Wars hadn't happened yet. You know, okay, maybe they were working on it, and then the Clone Wars erupted.
Okay, that's fair enough. But there had to have been tons of Pabuans who lived through the 30-year-old tsunami.
Maybe that is the point of that episode, because it's mostly it was apparently talking about mostly refugees from the Clone Wars and then the Empire's
rule.
Yeah,
that's actually a good point.
Maybe they just knew because they had done some meteorological calculations that the last one had been 30 years and they were just starting to build that, but they didn't quite, you know, get there.
That's a fair point. Also, their warning system sucked. So many people would have drowned if it weren't for the Bad Batch that just happened to be there on that day.
Well, no, their warning system didn't suck. Their warning system was pretty good.
The response to the warning, I don't know.
Their response, again, their response team left stuff to be desired. But the warning system, it sounded when there was about to be a tsunami. We'll give them that.
Yeah, it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah. But I love the fact that, you know, something has to yank them back in the story. Something, you know, but you know, it wasn't looking that good for a moment. Hunter says to Shep in the beginning of this episode, we're considering staying here full time. But he also acknowledged, I also love that he acknowledged how weird it was. And there's that idea of the soldiers putting down roots is an occupational hazard. And I love that line because, like, because again, it's one of those things, and I like this specific principle because it's a scientific principle, but I think you can apply it to people and seeing how people work and how people operate very well too, which is Isaac Newton's first law of motion.
Yeah.
What does that say? An object stays in motion.
Acted upon by
an opposing force.
External force. Yeah.
An external force. An object stays at rest unless active. People keep doing what they're doing unless somebody convinces them to change. And that's they've been on the move ever since their squad's inception. So they don't know a life of stillness. They don't know that. They cannot organically do that unless somebody steps in and says and convinces them, hey, you should do this. And I like that idea. And then when Echo lands, Tech is of course giving Omega flying lessons. And there's this really fun line where Omega goes, the tick turn, really? And then and then Tech goes, now that is not what it's called, but I rather like it.
Dude, I love Tech. It makes me so sad. It makes me so sad knowing what was coming. Watching this episode, knowing what was
we'll
coming.
We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there.
I'm just saying.
But I love that Tech is growing into his own skin a little bit. Like, he's like, yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, definitely. I like the way he says, he's just like very matter of fact. But if it says, we're safe only because I'm a boss and I have good reflexes and I can think on my feet.
It's fantastic.
Like, yeah, talk your shit, Tech.
We got Vilhuff Tarkin's re-entry into this series. The last time we saw him, I believe, was last season, actually. And God, Stephen Stanton's so good at doing that character. Like, of all the characters that he does, like, new and old, AP5 is fantastic. His Kenobi, I think, is underrated in Twin Suns. I'm trying to think of other ones that he does. He does AB5. He was Admiral Raddus, and that was good. He was Griff on Resistance, and I think those are all fantastic. He was Mossa Maeda. Again, I think it's fantastic. But Wolf Tarkin, I think, is the best one he does, honestly. I think Tarkin is the best one he does. I love what he evokes from the late great Peter Cushing. I really do love that. I think it's really something special that he does there.
It's a great portrayal of Tarkin here. It really is.
Yeah.
Even though it looks like he's aged maybe 15 years since we see him in Lola Sayu. But yeah,
I was going to say that was like 4 years and he's aged at least 9.
That's not even 4 years.
No, you know, it's been, no, that's been like 3 years, three, four years, when does something like that.
How long after Order 66 does the Bad Batch season?
I believe the year switches somewhere in Batch. I believe at the start of the season, it's still 19 BBY, but it switches to 18 somewhere in there.
So it could be around a year later, potentially.
Around this point, it is the year.
This is like 2 years. This is two to two and a half. Maybe
two and a half years. Yeah, in two and a half years, he ages like 8. So
yeah,
that makes sense. But you know, I love everything that Tarkin does in both this episode and the summit. Fantastic. And we'll get to Eriadu and what that means for. And yes, I know. By the way, for people who are about to correct me. I know it is pronounced Eriadu. I don't care. Eriadu sounds better.
It does.
I've decided that this is one of the only Star Wars pronunciations that I just don't care about.
Eriadu. You know, I really grew up thinking it was Eriadu.
I kept saying Eriadu, and I like that better. And that's what I'm gonna keep going with. There's just some other ones like I remember I was on a call with some friends, and a friend of the show, Alden Diaz, was telling me that he voiced the species. What was it? It was the species that great figures like Elo Asti and Eli. He voiced it. He said it as Edo. I'm like, no, man, it's Abednado. It's Abednado, 100%. And then like a bunch of us got into a huge argument about whether it was Abednado or Abendido. And I'm like, it's Abednado, and I swear if Pablo Hidalgo himself says the canon pronunciation is Abednado, is Abednido, I will still go, yeah, so Abednado. If J.J. Abrams comes out and says, yeah, I actually intended it to be said Abednido, I would still say Abednado. That's how committed I am to this stuff. If George Lucas himself said, yeah, it's actually pronounced Zamwizel, we're not going to go there, never mind. Then we have, of a great line here, and I remember Alex Damon from Star Wars Explained talking about this line when this episode came out, and it's this quick exchange of dialogue where Hunter says, Echo, you've seen the power we're up against. You cannot defeat them. And Echo says, it's not about that. It's about fighting for our brothers. And it's one of those things where
a great moment.
It's a great moment, and it's one of those like, it's one of the main themes of like an Empire Strikes Back Star Wars story, a middle chapter of a Star Wars story, which is with no end in sight. How do you keep fighting and not lose your sanity or your soul?
How do you keep fighting, knowing that you're not gonna be the one to win?
At least best. Not alone.
Like, yeah, but like, how do you keep fighting? At least, like, knowing or feeling like, at least at this point with the Empire, like, you got to feel pretty certain that the best you can hope for is not even to win, but just that there will be someone else to carry on the fight.
Yeah.
That was very powerful to me. And that was, I feel like that was kind of the subtext of what Echo was really saying in a way.
Oh, absolutely. You know? And given that Lucasfilm's been releasing a lot of middle chapters here, Mando was one of the only exceptions with Bad Batch, that's a main theme of Jedi Survivor, which I know I've completed several times and Jacob still hasn't, but trust me, it's a main theme is how do you keep fighting and how you keep like talking about what you believe in, but not lose your soul to it.
Yeah. Funnily enough, Saw Gerrera, who's a case study in that very thing, shows up in the next episode.
Absolutely. We're gonna talk about Saw. We're gonna talk about the only one with clarity of purpose.
Dude, Saw is so funny to me, man.
I am the only one with clarity of purpose. I love that guy. Anything Forrest Whitaker, I'll talk to. Anyway. But yeah, they put the pieces together, and that leads us into our finale. Anything else do you want to say before we go into this fucking banana balls two-part finale?
I'll just say, I think this episode is absolutely amazing. It's a really good episode. I think it's, of all the episodes of The Bad Batch, I think this one, it might not be my very favorite because it doesn't have the most exciting content, perhaps. But just in terms of the execution, you know, in terms of the pacing, the way the story flows, you know, just having every component of the story kind of just working in harmony in terms of that feeling of execution, I think this might be the best episode of Bad Batch from that more technical standpoint. It was so, so potent, taut, tense, compelling. It kept driving forward. I really love this episode.
Was a sense of why, like, I was asking myself why, or a little early in the season, why I didn't like try and do like a few more two episodes, and why I insist putting this one with the finale. But I wouldn't have it any other way. The best strength of this episode is what it does to set up the finale.
Absolutely.
And that's not a slam on the episode. It fulfilled exactly what it was meant to do. And let's talk about what it was meant to set up. Why don't we?
Let's do it. Yeah.
So they're leaving for Iriadu. They find out that, wow, I did it. Fuck.
Iriadu.
Which one of the things I love about Iriadu, and this was greatly expanded on in the novel that was written about Tarkin, that was one of the first for the new canon, just the titular Tarkin, and that Wilhuff is a reflection of the planet he grew up on, because like it looks from what we see of this episode. It looks like a pretty calm, peaceful planet. Like, you know, trees growing everywhere and all that kind of stuff.
Didn't Tarkin have an incredibly traumatic childhood? Isn't that kind of the way he is? That's the reason he is the way he is?
That's what I was going to say, is that a very rough planet. It's a very rough planet. They're like animals that will tear your shit out and stuff like that. And I love the idea of Iriadu mirroring Tarkin about like beneath the polite and placid exterior, you have this harsh and vile soul under it.
Yeah, real, like, true brutality.
Because Tarkin is extremely polite. Right before
he
bombs worlds.
Yeah. He is also very passive-aggressive in this episode towards Hemlock. I want to point that out. I just think it's absolutely funny. I just thought it was funny how petty Tarkin decided to be. He was like, now that everyone's finally here, we can get ready. Like, oh, come on.
Well, dude. Yeah, and of all the commanders in that room, we've never seen him be passive aggressive against any other of them. None.
Are you being I assume you're being sarcastic.
Right now. Yes.
I couldn't.
Krennic,
yeah,
is like that entire relationship between them in those two movies is Krennic going, "Hey, can I do this?" and Tarkin going, "Sure."
It's really totally. It's Krennic.
You can totally do that.
Krennic saying, "I made this," and then Tarkin saying, "No, I made this." That's what it really is. But yours as well. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Eridu is fantastic. I also want to notice, I also want to point out that Tech is the one. Tech is the one that pioneers this mission. We do not leave our own behind, Tech says.
Damn right.
I love that as like a final, because in the show, in TCW, or in the beginning of this show, I don't think he would have been like saying that.
Now we
I think
see
he
the
would have
real...
deferred to Hunter,
yeah,
or maybe Echo, or maybe Rex, or whoever it would be.
Yeah. But I think he comes into his own where Tech has kind of found his moral voice. And I think we can kind of trace that back to, you know, him talking with Omega in the cave episode, in the crossing, you know?
Like I also think stuff like
that feels
faster.
Like a direct line to this, you know?
I think stuff like faster, I think stuff, even like the arc at the beginning of the season, really led to him finding his voice and finding who he was as a person.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah,
and this
I
really
want to
was,
take
this
you.
was the season of Tech.
Oh, absolutely.
This was the season of Tech.
I want to send you to a flashback of me a few months ago. See you around, brown eyes. Is Tech gonna? No, they wouldn't do that, right? Right, they wouldn't do that. Arrested Development voice. They in fact did do that. That was the moment where I'm like, they're not going to, are they going to kill off Tech? No, they couldn't.
You know, I can't remember the circumstances under which I watched the finale the first time, but I feel like it was spoiled for me.
Ooh.
I feel like it was spoiled for me because I feel like I knew. But yeah, I mean, rewatching it, the foreshadowing is... There's a certain feeling you get sometimes, and this is the worst part of being a Star Wars fan, or I guess a fan of anything. You know something bad's going to happen. You just feel a little sick to your stomach, but you have to accept it.
I felt the same feeling that I
have to
felt,
go for the ride again.
I felt the same feeling that I felt when Han walked onto that bridge. Where I'm like, I think I know what's about to happen, but I don't think they'd do that, would they?
Man. Yeah. I mean, this was so powerful when I was watching, not even his death, but the lead up sequence to his death, you know, with him even before, you know, he's dangling there and the TIE fighters or the
moment he like starts to jump up in Plan 99, I'm like, oh fuck.
Yeah, the V wings
oh,
are shooting.
No.
Him. And I think, you know, it took me right back to when I was 12. I remember it. I was 12, and my family was on a road trip. I was 12. I was in the car. I was holding an iPad, and I was sitting in the back seat watching in disbelief as the Phantom flew away from the Malachor Temple without Ahsoka inside.
Oh yeah. Oh, I
And
thought you were gonna go for a different Rebels moment.
I had that very same feeling where I was just like, holy shit.
I thought you were going to talk about a different Rebels moment where it's like Kanan's cutting his hair.
Oh man, that's true. That oh my gosh. Man, season
and
four
he
of Rebels.
Realized
he
gonna die.
Like,
he gonna die.
People didn't realize the greatness that they were witnessing in season three, and especially season four of Rebels. That was really something else. My goodness.
He gonna die anyway. But yeah. I do like, I will say this. I love that his relationship with Fee is still extremely awkward. You know,
yeah.
they gave
I mean,
him a good
it's...
arc before he died, but you can't say everything you want to say or do everything you want to do before he died. That's just not possible. So I love that they didn't make him
It's the same with
perfect.
Kanan and Hera to an extent, you know?
Yeah, but I love that he
wish
wasn't
you had
perfect
more time.
Before he died. You know
oh,
what
yeah,
I mean?
100%.
Like, they
Yeah.
gave him an arc and he's a better version of himself, but no
Yeah.
one's perfect.
He was still kind of a dick to Fee. Even
and I don't think it
before
was
they went all...
intentionally, but you know.
No, I don't think it's
yeah.
I don't think it's intentional at all. And I think Fee knows that.
Yeah.
Fee knows that, but I think it's just kind of it just goes to, it's kind of just saying, hey, you know, people are complicated. And you know, not to be too morbid or anything, but you know, you should always be kind to people, especially the people that you really love.
Yeah.
Because nothing is,
well, we
can't
don't
take
really know
every day for
how
granted.
Tech felt about Fee.
We don't know. That's true. But
yeah.
I just mean in a general sense. Like,
no, I understand. Yeah.
He cares about her as friends of the squad, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But feeling, just watching that scene and feeling like, wait, is there actually romantic, is there actually palpable romantic tension in the Bad Batch? What is happening right now? It's a pretty fun scene just for that alone.
By the way, here's something that I'm a little annoyed about just lore-wise in this one. It's been a year. The Empire is up and running. Like, I understand they might not have all of their sheep in a row, but why the fuck are we still seeing TK troopers in V-Wings?
In V-Wings? I think it's just, it takes time. The transition takes time. I think it's more realistic and interesting that way than to just be like, TIE fighter, TIE fighter, TIE fighter, go, go, go.
I know, well, like, it's been two seasons. It's been a year. Like, I want to see my fucking TIE fighters. I want to see the Stormtroopers. I want to see the
we'll
TIE
get your
fighters.
TIE fighters. Don't worry. You'll get your TIE fighters.
I really hope we're going to get them in S3 because I really want to see them. It feels so unnatural because, like, I expect them. And and credit to them because the V-Wings do sort of look like TIE fighters. Like,
I think
when
the
they're
V-Wing is kind of the intermediary step symbolically. You know, they
oh,
sound
absolutely,
much
yeah.
more like TIE fighters. They're made by Sinar, are they not?
I think so, probably, yeah.
Yeah, they're made by Sinar. I used to have a Lego V-Wing.
Yeah.
My dog ate it or something.
Oh, I want to talk about our boy at the meeting.
Which boy? Tarkin?
Nah.
Hemlock?
Krennic.
Krennic. Man,
this is
who
our
was
first
just sitting there?
on
What
this
do you
is.
mean?
This is
What
our
do you
first
mean?
on-screen appearance of Orson Krennic. Do you realize
Okay,
that
that's
one
fair.
chronologically?
That is fair, yeah.
I did some research because obviously the book Catalyst, which was the tie-in novel, the prequel to Rogue One, has more information than this one. So when Tarkin asks him, Commander Krennic, tell us more about Project Stardust. He is currently working on it with his deputy and longtime friend, Galen Walton Erso. Erso is still working on it. He won't leave the Empire for another year. The Rogue One prologue will not take place for another few years. Yeah, I think Rogue One prologue takes place in 15 BBY. So, you know, we'll get to that when we get to that. The point being is, I love that Krennic's here. I fucking love that Krennic's here. I love that they animated the model. Do you realize he says like two lines in this whole thing and that's still Ben Mendelsohn and they still got him?
Fair enough,
Like, you
fair
know,
play.
Movie star Ben Mendelsohn. Like,
fair play, fair play.
Secret Invasion Ben Mendelsohn. Like, Ready Player One Ben Mendelsohn. Like, Captain Marvel Ben Mendelsohn. That Ben Mendelsohn.
We don't talk about Ready Player One.
What?
We don't talk about Ready Player One.
I thought it was a decent movie.
I didn't like it. I guess it was better than, I don't know. The book was just,
I've heard the
book
is awful. I haven't read it, so.
I don't think the book is awful. I think it's good. We can cut this out if it's too irrelevant.
Yeah,
I just
no.
really don't like the way he talks about women's bodies. It's very creepy.
I've heard that as well, honestly. Yeah.
He goes into way too much detail. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
But anyways, back on target. Yeah, I mean, Ben Mendelsohn. Shout out to Ben Mendelsohn for...
Shout out to Ben Mendelsohn. One of my
going
favorite
up
parts
for the
of
Bad
Rogue
Batch.
One. One of my favorite parts of Rogue One is Ben Mendelsohn's performances, director Krennic. Still can't save that movie from being mid as hell, but you know.
Oh,
anyway.
No more Rogue One slander. No more Rogue One slander. We literally just talked about how in Solo was the movie where they had that the worst scene in all of Star Wars. Han Solo stamps passport. The end.
Anyway.
Not even gonna
Yeah, let's reserve
the right
yeah.
to abstain
yeah.
from any Rogue One related slander.
You know what I realized? We're getting to a lot sooner in the galaxy, and this is related to this episode, and you'll see why.
Solo?
Train sequences.
Oh yeah.
We get a
Gotta
lot
love
of
those train sequences.
Because I was like, other than these few, I don't think we've gotten a lot of train sequences in Star Wars. The three same train sequences I can think of that we've gotten in Star Wars are this at the end of this episode, the train sequence at the beginning of Jedi Fallen Order, and then the train sequence in Solo. Both of the latter two, which we're getting to pretty soon after we finish this season. Get ready for a lot of train sequences, I guess is what I'm saying.
Fair enough. Everybody loves trains. You know,
yeah.
How about Tarkin, though? How about Tarkin in the meeting scenes? Because this guy, bro, Tarkin, he was determined to make that meeting happen. And I thought it was a fun moment. I loved seeing Tarkin, you know. The bombs, the news breaks, the bombs go off. Or I guess the news breaks first.
Yeah.
And he's like, gentlemen, please take your seats. We will continue. And then he kind of says very pointedly, he kind of says, as you can see, we are quite safe. As if to say, oh, no one's getting out of here. No one's leaving. That's what he's really saying. They lock the doors, they close the windows and everything.
They get those shock troopers in there, yeah.
Shock troopers come in, and then the explosion happens, and you see Tarkin's face. Just like, dude, Tarkin?
He's like, dude's like checking his watch and shit.
I don't want to call him, I don't feel like badass is quite the right word to describe Tarkin.
He's stone cold.
He's ice, yeah, he's ice cold. He does not crack under pressure.
By the way, you realize the other people at that table, right? Other than Tarkin and Hemlock and Krennic.
No.
Well, there's General Hurst from Modi from New Hope, and then he was later retconned to be in Rogue One, played by a new actor. And then Admiral Kohar. Admiral Coburn from the Clone Wars.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. He was the one Coburn. Who was like, hey, I think the clones are kind of neat, though.
Yeah. Then Tarkin was like, fuck no, loser.
It's like
hell
nope. And so we have this, by the way, God love Jimmy Simpson, like love that man for all he does in making me hate the absolute fuck out of Royce Hemlock.
I think Hemlock is such a I'm very excited for Hemlock to come back next season.
I love him so much more than Rampart. I like Rampart. But Rampart is not the best thing that Noshir Dalal has done in Star Wars.
I mean, Rampart's just your boilerplate, like pretty boilerplate, arrogant Imperial.
Rampart is fantastic. Someone. Again, Rampart's not the best Star Wars character Noshir Dalal has done.
What else has
Noshir is done? Bo Dakuna of Fuck Bo Dakuna fame.
Wait, that's the same voice actor?
Yep.
Wow. That's pretty good. That's good range, though. Amazing range.
It is good range. Anyway, but there's a sequence of Hemlock, and he's describing his projects. Once we fully unlock the secrets previously only known to the Kaminoans, we will ensure an enlightened society through their advanced technology and molecular alteration. That doesn't mean anything, but I'm fucking scared.
Yeah, I mean, Hemlock is a true believer. I don't know what his relation to Palpatine is, but whatever is going on, he seems pretty ride or die for Palpatine. Like
he
is pretty bought into not just doing what he's doing for science,
but for the Empire.
And not just for, I don't think it's for the Empire. The way he talks about it is for Palpatine specifically.
Yeah,
the Emperor. He's always talking about the Emperor's purpose.
Purpose.
The
yeah,
highest purpose.
I was just gonna.
It's very Bissy. Reminds me of Biss in the old legends, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say that freaking, what was I going to say about the Hemlock? Oh, yeah. Hemlock, I think, does some of the greatest work with the dialogue that reminds me of what Harrison Ford said to Lucas on the set of New Hope when he was trying to read hard Lucas dialogue. He goes, you can type this shit, George, but you can't say it. And that is this dialogue. Like, this hodgepodge of words and phrases means literally nothing, but Jimmy Simpson makes it sound extremely threatening.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just enough to give us a little bit of clarity, but not enough to actually tell us anything about what's happening. But yeah, let's see. I literally took so many notes on the fucking meeting that I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot we're dealing with a bad batch here. Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Omega being the one, I was gonna say this, Omega being the one to place the tracker on Hemlock's ship, even if it doesn't work, that's growth for the character. Would they trust her to do that in mid early season one? No. But Wrecker goes, do you think you're up for it? And Omega says, yep. And she was, and he's like, yeah, that's what I was hoping for. Go do it. And then she does it. And then she gets off scot-free, except for that mouse droid. And then Wrecker impales the mouse droid. So that's Omega's arc. That's Omega's arc from beginning of season one. You have to stay behind on the ship too. You have to do the thing that hinges on the whole mission's success. Even though it doesn't go that way, she does her part well. That's Omega's arc for me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. What else for this episode? Talk about Saw Gerrera.
Let's do it.
Because he
Let's.
I mean, this is I don't think there's too much to say, because all I will say is this is typical Saw Gerrera, you know. He
Typical
just wants to
Saw.
blow up the base. He doesn't care about any prisoners, even when he hears about it. There's no change of plans. So you expect me to not blow shit up just so you can
Yeah.
rescue your friends? Are you
It,
serious?
Saw,
That's
seeing Saw at
his
this point is fantastic. I love the, like, there's that great line that he says that Ander Kashino delivers beautifully. Sometimes sacrifices have to be made for the greater good. And it's like, I can totally, like, you can see one of the things is that I love about canon is that Saw Gerrera, like, you can see his descent into, his total sheer mania for this cause. We go from sometimes sacrifices have to be made for the greater good. Saw is the step before the revolutionary free the Wookiees. Saw before anything else is the step before the I am the only one with clarity of purpose. Saw from Andor is the only one before is the step before if you continue to fight on the Empire's terms you are going to lose. Saw from Star Wars Rebels is the step before lies deception. Saw in Rogue One, they're all a step more into believing his own hype, believing that he is the only one who can who sees what's going on in the galaxy, distrust and fighting against the Empire his way or the highway.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic and something, and I love Ander Kashino. Like, God, I really do love him. I think he established Saw as a great character, and I think it's great that he voiced him during the Bad Batch. But everything that Forrest Whitaker does, as I was gonna say before, touches with Saw Gerrera turns to gold. Like, my favorite scene in all of Andor, if I want to be brutally honest, is the shouting match between Luthen and Saw. The one where he calls Anto Krieger another rebel leader who's supposed to be helping him. The one where Forrest Whitaker convincingly saw calls him an ox. Remember that? Remember when Saw Gerrera calls another rebel leader an ox?
I do remember that. It's a moment. That's
It's
peak Saw. It's like
fantastic.
peak Saw is just, it's like the that Homer Simpson, it's kind of like the old Homer Simpson meme where he just goes, everyone is dumb except me. I mean, that's pretty much Saw. Saw is like, I'm smart and everyone else is dumb, and it's my way or the highway. That's
Yeah.
kind of just his thing.
By the way, I want to address some minor discourse I've seen about this moment and say to people that I saw an idea floating around very, very, very briefly when this finale was going around on Twitter. Guys, come on. Saw is not the villain of this episode. He's not responsible for Tech's death. He's not the villain. He simply had a differing goal from the Bad Batch.
Yeah, that's true.
He's not the villain. Nobody say he's the villain, and nobody say that's how the episode was painting him, because it's not. It was just, uh-oh, Saw's there, and we're not going to convince him to do things our way, but he's not trying to hurt the batch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just wanted to clear that one up before, because I saw people saying that. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, fucking come on, guys. Like, anything else to say for this episode, or do we want to go straight up to 99?
Literal cliffhanger ending. We gotta get into
Yep.
Plan 99. This is This is where this is where it really happens.
There's no second drum beat with the theme. There's just silence. The bass drums are sounding. Holy shit, this is going to be... this is going to hurt. First, I want to talk about Tarkin sending an air support, even though his own troops could be shot down. That's peak Empire. And I love that. I feel like we both need to get to this. There is no time, Rekka. Plan 99. Don't you do it, Tech! When have we ever followed orders?
Pretty good last week.
Releases the zip line, and Tech dies. My God. I remember a substantial part of both of the podcast conversations I had post Bad Batch 2, but before we did the season, both with Keith and Kerwin from Fathers of the Galaxy and with Jared and Connor and Kaysen from the Nerd Academy podcast and Spencer. Even though they were about summarizing the season as a whole, they were really talking about this episode in this moment, about Tech's death, because it had such a crazy impact.
It really did. I think. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think one of the things that makes this episode great, I think episodes where in TV shows, in Star, specifically in Star Wars, but also in TV and entertainment, you know, moments of incredible loss, especially I think in TV shows, because it's such a great way to build up a relationship with the viewer over time, where it feels so important to the viewer. Those are some of the greatest opportunities to kind of take the show to the next level in terms of revealing. These are the moments that reveal the most about the characters, about their relationships, about who they are, about what kind of show the show wants to be. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, I guess not a death, but after Kanan was captured in season one of Rebels, that's some of the most important character development and storytelling moments of Rebels. After Hera is captured in Rebels, and after Kanan dies in Rebels, those are the moments, you know?
Yeah, it's what a, like...
I don't really have words. This moment hits super hard.
It hits so hard. I remember talking, if anyone who's listening to this hasn't checked out my episode with Alden Diaz about the discourse, please do. And I remember we were talking about this, and he so wisely said, you know, we all thought that Plan 99, because we got the titles before this, we all thought Plan 99 was going to be this heroic sequence of the Batch, like gathering other clones or working together in this super ingenuitive way. Plan 99 is a man down. Plan 99 is a sacrifice. And none of us saw that coming.
That's just like how 99 sacrificed himself. The original, the OG.
Holy shit. I didn't think of that. Holy shit.
There's a reason man down is Plan 99.
Yeah.
Also, what is 99 upside down?
66.
Yeah. That's right. I think the actual 99 one is more meaningful.
Oh, no. I think
it's this number it's the number for a reason, not just because they're Clone Force 99. You know?
But yeah, holy shit. They wanted to get Crosshair back, but they lost one of their own instead.
Man, the whole...
He'll never get to see any of them again. He'll never get to see Crosshair again. He'll never get to know that he had another sister. He'll never get to see Fee again.
Man, stop. That's
by the way... By the way, if I say one thing in this episode that I'm going to keep in this motherfucking episode. Hey, listen here. All of you Tech are not dead people. I feel your pain. I really do. That motherfucker is dead. We need badly, and Jacob knows this is one of the things I'm most passionate about with Star Wars storytelling. I'm not like somebody who demands a lot from Star Wars storytelling. We need deaths to start meaning a bit more in Star Wars.
We do. We do. We can't, no more fake outs. No more Tech Rise is, of Skywalker
Tech is
death shit.
D-E-D dead. Tech is so dead. By the way, so is Gideon, by the way. Gideon is so dead. If you want to clone Gideon, if you want to say that one of Gideon's clones survived that, I'm honestly fine with that. But the original body, subsumed in flames, dead. We'll get to another piece of evidence that Tech is so incredibly DED at the end of the episode. But he's dead. Come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah. It almost feels like, and I think the only thing more heart-wrenching than the first 5 minutes of the episode are the second 5 minutes of the episode.
Oh, absolutely.
Watching Omega cope with it.
That's one of the greatest things. Yeah.
The greatest line. He didn't let us save him. That's the clone. That's everything in that one line. That says so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And yeah, the blur transitions, the muffled sound editing is like Hunter's grief after Omega was captured in S1. Perfectly done by the production team. Bravo to them. Fantastic. Love it. Yeah. We talked about this with Keith and Kerwin on Father Son Galaxy about this, but you know, they make the decision to go back to Orb Mantell. Was that the best decision? Absolutely not. Were they in the best headspace to make a good decision right now? No, they just lost their brother.
It was a desperation move.
It was a desperation pull. Yeah, and yeah, speaking of
fuck Sid Scale back.
No, wait. We're gonna get to that. I was gonna just quickly say, speaking of great Omega lines, God bless Michelle Ang, and God bless her for the delivery of he can't be.
Yeah, that was the best. Like that
beautiful,
kind of
100% beautiful.
And he didn't let us rescue Omega. Kind of exemplifies the Clone Wars, the attitude of the clones. The attitude of Star Wars, the attitude of the Clone Wars, and even of Star Wars as a whole, which is often it filters through in various ways. But at the end of the day, Star Wars is a story about heroes, and heroes have to do the impossible.
Yeah.
But sometimes the impossible is actually impossible. They can't bring back Tech. And I think it almost feels a little bit like they're kind of towing the line on not breaking the fourth wall, but they are kind of addressing maybe the creators are addressing the audience. Maybe the writers are addressing the audience a little bit, saying, no, Tech's actually dead.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you gotta just sit with it and let it burn, you know?
Yeah.
That was an incredible episode.
By the way, here's another one of my favorite lines of this episode. The galaxy has changed, and so have we. It's time to put being soldiers behind us for good. Becker and I think Pabu could be a good place to make a new life for ourselves. I'm like, that's very cool. You still haven't learned your lesson. You don't have to. Don't worry about it. Things are about to get a lot worse for you.
Yeah.
All right.
And then Omega gets captured.
No, wait. I want to quickly say in as loud and as clear a voice as I can, fuck Sid Scaleback. All my homies hate Sid Scaleback. That son of a bitch.
That was, yeah, no. Not
I
having
think,
fun.
Honestly,
that
I'm
was
more
not
angry about Sid betraying them than about Tech's death. Tech's death makes me sad, don't get me wrong. But fuck Sid. Like, yeah. Fuck her.
You know, when Hunter gives them
don't give her the Lando treatment, Bad Batch. I'm begging you. She doesn't deserve it.
Yeah. Don't make her. How can she be? She can't be sorry now after everything.
Yeah,
she
can't be sorry now. There's heat on her. There's heat on all of us, Sid. Like, be fucking for real right now. Be fucking for real.
Yeah.
The
relationship that I said it before and I'll say it again. And I think it rings true to me that the relationship that Sid has with the Bad Batch is pretty literally an abusive relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Nothing about that rings more true to me than when she's finally sorry. You know, she finally.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Sid, let me ask you something.
She's justified.
Did you pay them back yet?
Yeah.
From when they rescued you from a gangster earlier this season? Did you do that? What about when you left them stranded on a planet that they couldn't get off because their ship was stolen? What about that one, Sid? You happy now, Sid? You happy?
Yeah. No words
yeah.
for this episode for so many reasons.
Yeah.
I feel dumbstruck.
Yeah.
By everything.
The one image that I think of immediately when I think of the second part is Wrecker in his cast, handcuffed, Hemlock standing in front of him, and Delta Squad flanking him. It's just the utter heartbreak of seeing Wrecker captured. Oh no, Hemlock's found them. They're not safe. Everything is going to shit. Here's how this is gonna go. You will lower your blaster and hand over Omega, and I will allow you to keep breathing.
It's pretty sick.
I hate him so much. I hate Hemlock so much, and I love Jimmy Simpson for it. God
damn it. I love
Hemlock.
I love to
I
hate
love
Hemlock.
Him so much. He is one of the easiest villains to love to hate.
He's a fun villain.
He's such a fun villain. What makes him extra threatening is he is Nouveau Vindi without any of the Nouveau Vindi eccentricities.
No crazy hysteric laughing.
You know, no, he doesn't say yes 600 times in a row.
Yes. None of that stuff.
He's all the intelligence and none of the eccentricities. He just talks quiet like this.
Well, he has his own affectations. You know, he's always rubbing his gloved hand. You're like, what is going on with this gloved
hand?
Yeah,
but he's not as sinister. He's not outwardly weird as Nouveau Vindi is.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely not. You're right.
Yeah.
I agree. Absolutely not.
I'm afraid this was all I could salvage. Consider it a gift. And then he holds up Tech's fractured goggles. That is, by the way, that is slamming somebody to the ground, and then kicking them in the privates. That is what that is. That he's just rubbing salt in the wound at this point.
Yeah. He's something else, man.
Yeah. And then we have the final twist of the season. The final plot point of the season. For the first time since mid-season one, Omega is not with her family anymore.
Yeah. Emery is her sister.
Emery is her sister. I mean, well, now she I guess she is with her family somewhat, but she's not in the care of Hunter and Wrecker and Echo.
Yeah.
Or Tech. Yeah. And she ends the season captured. Tech dead, Omega captured. Man, the Bad Batch has not had a great few episodes. What happens next? Well, we're going to have to wait till season 3 comes out next year to figure that one out. But anything else for either of these three episodes other than your overall thoughts?
Oh, I think these are just some incredible episodes, and it left me so excited, so excited for season 3. That last scene with Hunter, Wrecker, and Echo resolving to get Omega back no matter what. Chills. Just chills. Incredible. Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to get her back, and I believe them when they say that. I believe them when they say that. I believe them 110%. I loved all three of these episodes. I think probably Plan 99 was my favorite just because of how heartbreaking it is. But yeah, dear God. Yeah, all of them are fucking terrifying. And they've so much grief in them, and they've so much heart in them. I gotta say, I had a specific way I thought both of these episodes were going to go, and Jennifer Corbett took those ideas nicely from me and dumped them in the trash. And I could not have been more satisfied in the way she did that. For these two episodes, she's joined my, like, the pantheon for me of, like, the best Star Wars writers. Like, she's written some banger episodes before, but, like, these really just showed off her chops in a way that nothing really before had. Absolutely, I'm so excited to see what she and Brad Rao and the rest of the Batch team have been cooking up for season three when it happens. But yeah, I think that's going to be it for our coverage of the Bad Batch. Thank you for listening to this episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Thank you for watching Hyperspace. We had a great time doing that. You can follow us at In a Galaxy Pod on everything. You can listen to us on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We will be there. If we're not, email us swinagalaxy@gmail.com. Watch Epic Confrontation on YouTube. Links down below. And in the meantime, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Always.